Hello, flower friends, and welcome to this week's episode of Let's Grow Girls, where we have another jam-packed, flower-filled episode for you.
Except they're dried.
Plot twist. So you've let our listeners know about our little change from regular recording today. It's mm-hmm. not about Big fresh twist. Flowers.
No, this time they're
it's
dried.
It's about dried flowers. Mm.
Which is exciting because this is something I'm especially excited about. I know I was saying to you, I wanted to do a bit of a pivot and I want to grow more dried things next year. So I've been really hammed up about this interview.
Yeah, I was looking forward to it as well. And I think as much as I want to grow four fresh flowers, I also want to grow four dried flowers too. I think it's just such a good way of keeping the season going for a bit longer.
Well, and especially when you see how beautiful they can be, I think, you know, there's definitely a way to make them less granny-ish, that's for sure.
Yeah, I've really missed having flowers in the house this winter. I don't know why, if it's got to do with lockdown and having spent so much time outside this summer, but next year I definitely want to keep it going a bit longer with some dried flower beauty.
So tell us, Nicole, who's our guest?
We have got Bex from Botanical Tales.
Hello, Bex. Welcome to Let's Grow Girls. How's your day going?
Yeah, good. Beautiful sunny day here, so that's always a good thing, I think. Yeah, it's good.
Well, and your background is full of beautiful flowers, so how could you have a bad day?
That's very true. No, I'm always happy when I'm in my studio. It's a peaceful haven.
And you're absolutely crammed full of dried flowers in there. I'm super jealous. Yeah. Every time I see your studio come up on Instagram stories, I'm just like, I normally send one of the stories to Sarah and we're both like, ooh, yep. Look at all the pretty flowers.
Yeah, it's I do use them for my work, but I also, the thing with dried flowers is, particularly as they've become a bit more popular, if I need anything, like I need to have enough to see me through the hungry gap, so to speak. Like we have a hungry gap with food, but there is also with flowers, and there's even more so with dried flowers. Like the dried flower season doesn't start until probably June, July at the earliest. So if I have any projects mm-hmm. or anything that I need things for, anything up until the middle of next year, I have to have it now. And that's why my shed looks so full of dried flowers.
I mean, it must be a kind of a weird season for growing dried flowers, because you have to account for the drying bit in there as well.
I can't grow and dry enough for the work that I do, although I do try as much as possible. I often have to kind of buy in, and I always try to buy from local flower farmers or, you know, any of my friends that I know that are drying their bits and pieces as well. But yeah, it's you know, if someone wants to work with me on their wedding, for example, next July, you know, I'm having to think in the summer before, what will I need to grow to then dry? Because really, British flowers, even though they get going in kind of spring and you get the tulips and things like that, and you can dry those, the majority of the more well-known everlasting flowers will not come to fruition until probably June at the earliest. So it's like a year ahead, if not even more, really, which is quite complex.
Yeah, it's a lot of planning if you want to go down the dried route for something special like a wedding.
Yeah, I think it is. It is. As long as you can be flexible, and you need to be that way with flowers anyway, with anything nature related, you have to be flexible. But yeah, if you want something really specific, or you've got a colour scheme or something like that, then there's quite a lot of prep that's involved to make sure you can have everything that you want.
Have you noticed an increase in dried flowers for weddings?
Yeah, I think just dried flowers generally. I mean, I've been working with them properly for kind of 5 years now. And when I first started out, I really struggled to get people to see them for what they could be. People were kind of stuck in that granny mentality of, like, you know, those sort of dried flower pasta wall art things of the whatever era that was, you know. And like, I don't know, it was, and I would make things, and then people would be like, oh, it's so lovely, it reminds me of my grandma. And I'd be there going, it's not really
what I was going for.
And it, at times I was like, do you know what, I feel like I'm flogging a dead horse here. No one can get over that, like, you know, it's a nostalgia thing, so it was a nice thing, but it was seeing it in a, seeing them as a modern thing rather than, oh, that reminds me of the past kind of thing. But that has shifted massively in 4 years, like more than I ever thought of. And people kind of still talk about dried flowers as being a trend, but I don't really see it as a trend. I just see it as it's now another option. And with everything that's going on with sustainability, particularly now with COVID and things like that, it's just a better option when it comes to these months, you know, like autumn, kind of winter, rather than buying flowers that have flown in from God knows where. So there seems to be a real awakening and an understanding. And I guess it's kind of followed the evolution of food as well, right? Where people are now shopping a bit more locally and wanting to know where their veg comes from. And it's the same with flowers. So yeah, a big, big demand in dried flowers for weddings, but just dried flowers generally.
Yeah, and I think what you're saying about them not being a trend now, I suppose it is more of an evolution, isn't it, away from the granny stuff. They've never gone away, dried flowers, have they? It's just the fashion, the style of them has become so much more modern now.
Yeah, it has. And I think something that I've really learned from working with them and getting people to see them for what they are and the benefits that come with them is I often like refer to them as more of a kind of interior styling option rather than a replacement for fresh flowers, because I don't think they are that. Like, I love fresh flowers as much as anyone else, right? But for me, it's more like, how would you use them to kind of bring extra texture and tones and beauty to your living space in a way that kind of fresh flowers can't? So, and I think people are seeing it more and more like that. That's why you'll see people having wreaths as indoor decorations now, and even kind of hanging floral mobiles and all sorts of stuff, and seeing it as a kind of extension to, you know, a picture frame on the wall or whatever it might be. So yeah, it's definitely, and it's interestingly become quite popular in a younger generation as well. So I have a sort of wide range of audience of people that buy from me, and a lot of people who are older, but then lots of people who are kind of much younger and doing it from a sustainability perspective and a longevity when it comes to kind of where your money goes.
So how did you get into dried flowers then? You said you had started about 5 years ago. What lent you to them?
I did. It was a bit of a random, in the sense that I definitely didn't have a business plan. I definitely didn't know what would come of them, I didn't know it would take me on this journey, basically. And I, not to kind of to go back to the nostalgia side of things, but my grandma and my mum also used to love dried flowers. And, you know, my mum used to have helichrysums like all over her kitchen. And, you know, my grandma was the same. And so I always had that kind of like connection. It's not like they were a completely new thing to me, but I rediscovered them by accident when I left a bunch of flowers that a friend had bought me to dry in a vase, and not intentionally, but just because I forgot about them. And it kind of made me reassess, I guess, but not in a really conscious way. And then I just started to create with them. So, and at that point I've always been a gardener, but I wasn't growing like I do now. So I bought some online from a British supplier, just to kind of like make wreaths and bunches and things like that. And then I started to get much more into the, well, actually I could grow and dry these as well, you know, so it was like the whole process. And that's really what interests me the most now, is the whole cycle from growing something from seed, watching it flourish, picking it, drying it, and then making something out of it. So it's kind of become, yeah, much more than it was when I first started out. Yeah, not really intentional, and probably all thanks to the wonderful world of Instagram, really, that it ended up where it was.
Such a great way to display your work, really, isn't it? Like, you know, like you're saying, getting that younger generation bought into dried flowers. I don't think you can get a better way than Instagram.
No, exactly. And I joined Instagram with the kind of, you know, Botanical Tales handle, if you like. And when I first started out, I thought that I was just going to be on there sharing stories of flowers and things like that. And then And this was like 4 or 5 years ago. Instagram was a very different place. It was much more community led. So, you know, when you found your tribe, there was a lot of, it's still like that to a certain extent, but it's so much busier now. And I think it was the first time that I, having fresh coming out of like having my second child, that I found some form of, not acceptance, that's a bit too deep probably, but something that I kind of really felt was my own. I'd been working in a corporate job, and, you know, I don't know what you ladies do, but when you work in corporate, you're basically working for someone else, and you don't, you know, there's not a lot of ownership. And then I had kids, and I was like, oh God, and now I'm a mom, and I'm doing this like in my day job for someone else. And then I started sharing photos and my love of flowers, and suddenly it got a bit of traction, and it was like, well, actually, maybe, well, this is amazing, actually, you know, that I found something that other people are interested in.
Yeah, something I did, other people liked, rather than something you did for your boss was like. So it's, yeah, I get what you mean in that respect.
Yeah, and I think, like, I've always loved gardening and I've always loved flowers, and, you know, I had always had my mum and my grandma to talk about that with, but I was, you know, back in the day, I was not cool for the amount that I used to garden. So, you know, I was growing sweet peas at 25, and, you know, people would come around for a barbecue and they'd be like, what, you know, beautiful garden, but what is this? Like, did you do this? You know, that kind of thing. So I've always had it in me, but I never really had anyone to, like, converse with about it apart from my mum and my grandma. And then when I found this world in Instagram of flower lovers, basically, I was like, wow, there's other people out there.
we're here.
We've been waiting the whole time.
Yeah, well, you guys know, I mean, once you realize that, and it's just so, it's such a wonderful space to be in, that kind of growing space. And yeah, people are so generous, and just, it was lovely. So it kind of stemmed from there.
So tell us more about the kind of things that are good for dried flowers, because I'm guessing not all flowers are suitable. I mean, I know you can dry everything, but what is best, really?
I'm asked this quite a lot. Like, there are the obvious ones, right, which I would call like your classic everlastings. So you've got your helichrysums, you've got statis, you've got things like rhodanth and acrolinium, and these are like some of the you know, the common names, is that the right thing, rather than the Latin, is like paper daisies. If you put those into Chiltern seeds or wherever it is that you get your seeds from, all of those kinds of things are the easiest things to grow and dry, because they are almost dry as they grow, if you know what I mean. So their petals are papery before you've even kind of hung them out to dry, and you pretty much can't go wrong with them unless you leave them too long before you pick them and then they go to seed. That's probably the worst that will happen. So those are your really obvious ones. But then, you know, I guess it's the, I always say it's the level with which you accept dried flowers. So anything will dry, basically, with a few exceptions, but it depends on whether you will or can kind of put up with the appearance of it as a dried object, if you know what I mean. So dahlias, I prefer them dried.
Oh, that's a fashionable one at the moment, isn't it, drying? Yeah, dahlias. And I'm a massive dahlia fan, and I tried drying them, and I just maybe it was the ones I was drying, but I couldn't get on board with them.
So those other flowers that I mentioned, which kind of fall into that everlasting bucket, they are the simplest things to just hang, and even if you had a slightly damp room, they would dry and it would be fine. The thing with something like a dahlia or a tulip or any, like a rudbeckia or a sunflower, anything like that, where they are, you know, they're just more fleshy and they're harder, you really need to have an incredibly dry space, and ideally with a little bit of heat as well. So it can't be cold and in any way damp. And to kind of add to that, those flowers will be susceptible to mold if they then, once they're dried and you then make a display with them or something, if they then come in contact with a bit of moisture, those are the kind of flowers where the heads will flop again. So that they are not the easiest to work with, and if you're just starting out, I really wouldn't recommend starting with those, because you'll probably be really disappointed. But yeah, the kind of more traditional everlastings, obviously you've got like your hydrangeas, any kind of seed heads just look beautiful, you know. And I think there's a real trend as well towards that, which is a more kind of structural type of dried flower, if you like, where people focus more on the grasses and the seed heads. And I think that's, for me, those are the things that I'm loving the most at the moment.
I love a Nigella pod.
Yeah, exactly. I've got some beautiful ones at the moment. They're like dark burgundy red. So they're lovely. Yeah. And then I'm trying to think what else. I mean, lots of wildflowers, obviously picked carefully if you do pick them, are so oxeye daisies and things like that dry beautifully. So, and thinking about kind of coming into spring, even though it's, you know, a good 3-4 months away. So ranunculus dry beautifully.
Oh, Sarah's favorite.
They are my favorite.
Yeah. They're so beautiful when they're dried. Again, they're quite sensitive, like dahlias. So if they get damp again, they will kind of go a bit floppy, but they're really, really stunning. Even anemones will dry.
Oh, wow.
Tulips will dry. But again, it's like, you know, some people would look at a dry tulip and be like, that's just dead, you know. It's kind of, because they change appearance. I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, if you take a helichrysum or a status and you dry it, aside from the stem of it, it will look the same.
Yeah, doesn't really look any different at all, does it?
Exactly. So, and you can kind of get your head around that. All those other things that I'm talking about, those other plants like the tulips and the dahlias, they look so different when they're dried. That it's very easy and understandable for people to say they look dead because they are so vastly different. So, but personally, I love most of the things that I dry, and I'm still experimenting. Like, I don't even know half the things, like the leaves and foliage that I've discovered this year that you can dry. So hosta leaves are beautiful dried.
Oh, really? I never would have thought to do that.
Yeah, exactly. And some of the ferns that I've been drying, it's very addictive.
What about grasses you mentioned? Is there any particular grasses you like? I mean, obviously Pampas, that's like the number one trend at the moment. They seem to have come, dare I say, excuse the pun, have swung right back into fashion.
Yeah, I know. I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan at all. I find them, well, first of all, I find the seeds like insane. They just float around and get in your eyes, and that really irritates me. And you can spray them with hairspray, but I'm all natural, so I don't do that. Mm. The worst is when actually my boys were playing with a Pampas grass thing earlier, and they're like, the grass seeds are all over their school uniform now.
I've heard of people nipping out in the night in hoodies, nicking them out of people's front gardens. That's what Instagram has driven people to do.
Yeah, but you know, they're really invasive. Like, they are, once they get going, they're hard to stop, and they're obviously huge.
Well, that's what I always thought. People were pouring. I remember back, like, when I was younger, my neighbours, my mum telling me that, I was like, what are they doing? And they were pouring bottles of bleach on their Pampas to try and kill it. And those things just don't die.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw you're supposed to set them on fire. Apparently.
Oh, God.
Yeah, anyway. Oh, God. Apparently. Yeah, chop them down, set them on fire.
Now everyone's stealing them in the night and spreading their seeds everywhere. So you do, but no, grasses I love. Well, quaking grass is just,
that's so pretty, isn't it?
Really pretty. Canary grass is also another one that I love.
That one's on my list for next year.
That's my favourite. I just bought some of that. Unfortunately, I didn't grow it, but I've been putting it in my fresh wreaths this year. I thought it's been such a pretty contrast.
Yeah, it really is. And then, there's bunny's tails, but I think, and I'm probably going to get this the wrong way around, but there's bunny tails and hare's tails. And I grew one of them one year and got really stumpy stems, but it's because I grew the wrong one.
Yeah, the bunny tails are the shorter ones and the hare's tails are the longer ones.
Everyone calls the long one.
They still call them the same thing, because I grew them this year, the bunny tails, and they were about 5 inches tall. I was like, what is this? I planted them in October and I was like, why are they still so small? But I actually prefer the canary grass to the hare's tails. I think it's more structural. It looks more unusual, I think, although you can't be stroking those bunny tails, can you?
I think the canary grass is a bit more modern, personally. I think the bunny's tails for me do take me sort of a little bit back to the olden days, but And then I think, you know, some of the wild grasses, that the kind of ones that look like mist, you know, like they're just beautiful in displays. I don't know the names of them. God, I mean, my husband used to be an ecologist, and he's always says that grasses are the hardest things to learn all the different names from. But yeah, I think some of those are beautiful. And then obviously you've got your teasels and your thistles and all of those kinds of things, which are beautiful at this time of year.
One I discovered this year was Bells of Ireland.
Yeah.
It dries really well. A friend of mine, I gave her a bunch here, and then I went to her room a few months later and she dried the whole bunch, including the Bells of Ireland. And it looked amazing. And I,
oh, really?
I was looking up at it being like, why didn't I think of that?
Another thing to do with Bells of Ireland is to leave them on in the ground, basically, so that they almost dry in situ, and then they, if you're lucky, will become skeletons.
Yeah, mine look like that at the moment because I haven't dug them up.
Yeah. Mm. No, but that's beautiful. That's like the natural process. And then they become this kind of like grey, silvery, you know, just really beautiful structural things.
They almost look like snake skin, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah. I think you have to be able to use them, they're not the easiest things to work with, right? Like you'd have to probably be making a particular kind of display to include them in, but I do think they're beautiful. And then obviously honesty is probably one of my favorite things, but people often pick honesty at the wrong time. So you need to be picking it before the pods have kind of released, you know, their outer shells. And then you need to peel them yourselves, basically, to get those silvery pods on the inside. Because if you leave them too long, like my mum sent me some up here and from her friend's garden, but they'd been left on the stem and then they just become really kind of brittle and break up. So, yeah, a good tip is to pick them around kind of June, July time, dry them and then pod them or whatever it is you want to call them.
See, honesty is the one I can't do because my granny has had the same bunch of dried honesty in her conservatory forever, maybe since I was born. Each year she just dusts them, and it's like part of Christmas to me is the bunch of dried honesty that my granny has always had. So honesty is the one that I just, it takes me right back. I can't do it.
Oh, I think it's beautiful. You should tell her that, I don't know how she's dusting, but a good tip to get rid of dust off a dried flower display is to use your hairdryer on a really low, cool setting.
Oh, that's a great tip.
And then you're not actually having to like touch them in any way, but it just blows off any excess dust.
I'll ask her. I can imagine her blow drying them.
I struggled with honesty this year because I think I planted them in October, expecting them to flower in, you know, May time, and they just didn't. And I just had these whopping great plants that were just green with no flowers on them. So they were a bit of a loss for me, but hopefully I'll get something next year.
Yeah, I've had that as well, because they are meant to, if you plant them in the autumn, come that next year. But I've had a similar thing. I did the same with some, what's it called? It's a thistle, and there's a silver, there's a white glitter and a blue glitter.
I want to say Echinops. Is that the one?
Yeah.
Am I saying that right?
It's the little tiny. Yeah, you are. It's the, I've got some here. So we can maybe look afterwards, and it's this tiny one.
Oh, that's pretty. They almost look like a thistle, don't they? Oh, they're Eryngium.
Yeah. So, and I planted that. I meant to have flowers this year, and it just hasn't come. But it's overwintering, so I'm hoping that next year they'll be good and strong. But yeah.
Well, that's the one that's really hard to grow from seed, isn't it? I was reading you have to buy roots, otherwise you basically got no hope.
I grew some from seed.
Ah, well, that's pretty good. But yeah, you might have a while to wait.
I might have a while to wait, and it did. I think I planted like 20 seeds, and I got about two.
Oh.
So it wasn't, you know, and it was a long slog, and I still don't. These are bought in. I still don't have any flowers to show for that hard work. Although I did bring them with me when I moved here because I was like, "Come on,
not letting them go."
No. One day I drove all the way back to Farnham, which is about 3 hours ago, and I basically just filled the car with all of the plants that I wanted to bring here and drove them back. It was a bit mad.
Oh, you needs must. You don't want to leave them when you've put all that work into them.
No,
So,
and have you guys planted lots of very trendy tulips and stuff like that?
Yes, I've planted, well, I need to finish planting my bulbs, but yeah, I bought lots of tulips. I'm a bit afraid of how many there is left to plant, but I've also got, and I'm going to attempt to dry these. I don't know if they'll, if I like them once they're dried, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, fritillaria.
Snake's
head.
Am I saying it right? Snake's head. Not snake's head.
Yeah. Oh, no.
I think they call them honey garlic as well.
Oh,
they're really? Like little, tiny little flowers that drop around. They're very pretty. Sicilian honey garlic, I think they're called. But we'll see how they end up.
Snake's head fritillary dries really, really beautifully. So yeah, if they're anything like that, they should do. And like that, you know, if you have onions or garlics that go over, you can always cut the seed heads off those. You know, the big balls with the kind of full of
took
seeds.
Took all my might not to steal the allotment neighbour's onion tops the other day. Yeah. All my might. I just thought they might want them for themselves.
Have you ever done that though, and just been like, are you gonna? You know, I mean, I've taken things from people's compost bins before.
Yeah, sometimes I say to them, can I? I mean, our allotment's quite like that. Everyone's, you know, quite sort of friendly. But I didn't like to take without asking and they weren't there.
You see, no.
That's too close to theft.
That is theft.
Yeah, I try and tell myself it isn't, but it is. Did you grow a lot of flowers on your allotment?
Yeah, it was slowly becoming more flowers and less veg. But I think it's when we first got the plot, it was like 12 years ago. So again, you know, I would have been quite young, like none of my friends were growing, and then we had an allotment, and it was something that me and my husband did together. And then we had kids, and it was really hard to go together. So normally my husband would stay at home with the boys, or you know, Henry and then Arlo. And it kind of became my thing, and then I got into flowers, and first of all, it was like just a little square where I grew flowers, and then it was a third. And I think if we'd stayed in Farnham, it probably would have been a half. It probably would have been flowers, all of it by next year, I think.
So what do you like making most with dried stuff?
So there are things that I find very easy and methodical is not the right word, but so my wreaths, bouquets, mini wreaths, all of that stuff that this time of year, you know, people are buying for friends and family and all that kind of stuff. And I love making all those things, and they're super easy in the sense that I know how to do it. And, you know, the things that I have to kind of consider are color combinations and textures and tones and all of that kind of stuff. So they're really, I enjoy making them in the sense that they are something that I know really well. And it is almost like meditative when I'm making them. But what I really enjoy is kind of bigger installations, you know, creating kind of a styling for weddings and stuff like that, which was becoming more and more what I do before obviously lockdown happened and then everything kind of went. So, and I think the challenge is when you're not, you know, when you're kind of in a situation like we are at the moment where you kind of need to take any work, right? Because you don't know what's coming next. Who knows what next year will bring? It's being able to find that time to still practice and do something above and beyond what comes easy. So, yeah, I think there's kind of, there's two sides to that. Like what excites me and really kind of interests me is putting together a mood board and coming up with an idea of a display, a tablescape. Whatever it might be, you know, a window, if I'm dressing a shop window for someone. But it's not that I don't love making the wreaths and the bouquets, because I do, you know, they're kind of my bread and butter. So what I do find interesting is when people ask for color combinations that I would never ever put together. So when you order from my website, you can, you know, you basically don't know what you're going to get, but you can tell me if you prefer a certain color, or, you know, if you don't like a color. And then someone will ask for something and I'll be like, wow, I don't know about that. And then I'll put it together. Because, you know, I'm obviously have my own personal preferences and I would never choose to make that. But it's actually really challenged me and opened my eyes to different color combinations that I never would have thought of.
Like what?
Things like putting... pink and yellow together, weirdly. It's not something I would ever do. But then I had a bouquet request the other day and I was like, God, this is, wow, this is lovely. Like, why have I never done that before? Again, I'm not really into pink, so that's probably why. But yeah, it's good. I like that people challenge me like that.
I recently got your book, and the thing that I'm most excited to try is the hair clip.
Nice, yeah.
I mean, I don't know where I'm going to wear it in lockdown, but I'm just going to flounce around the house with it.
I think everyone should wear flowers in their hair all the time. It's or any kind of. I mean, why would you not? Really, is my question.
definitely a woman after my own heart there.
Yeah, exactly. I normally just have them sticking out my hair because I've walked through a bush or something like that. But a hair clip is a nice way of doing it.
And so we've talked a lot about what kind of flowers and what you like to do with them. In terms of actually drying them, do you have a particular point at which you pick them? Is it just like before they turn to seed that you like to pick them?
It depends on the flower as you know, the same when you're kind of picking fresh flowers. But generally, as a rule, you want to pick them when they're at their best, so before they start to turn, but not when they're in bud, because with some exceptions they will probably just go moldy. So a rose, for example, if you try to dry it in bud, is not really going to work. Same with a dahlia. The thing that you want to avoid is that they are beginning to go over, and then as you dry them the petals tend to kind of just fall off, or they go brown or something like that. And one of the things with, for example, helichrysiums is as you dry them, they tend to continue to develop as you dry them. Mm-hmm. So if you pick them too late, they will go to seed as you're drying them, which is quite handy if you want to collect the seed. Yeah, but not great if you wanted to use them. So it's a bit of a fine line. And then something like a hydrangea, for example, if you were to pick them now where we've had the first frosts, you could pick them now and they're pretty much almost dry and papery to touch now. But if you wanted to pick them, you know, at the beginning of kind of autumn, you need to make sure that they are all fully out, you know, all the way around the kind of head of the hydrangea. And then you need to leave them sitting upright in water for a good month, if not two, for them to dry naturally like that. Mm. They don't do well hanging upside down, generally, as a rule, hydrangeas. Same with gypsophila, stuff like that. You need to dry kind of upright. But for the most part, everything else can be dried upside down. By far my preferred method, mainly from a space perspective. I might dry hydrangea heads inside as a kind of display as well. But I'm all about ease. And I talk about in my book, I talk about drying with silica, which is that stuff that you get in when you buy a handbag or something like that. You might get a little packet of, you know, don't eat me silica gel. And it's really good for drying really delicate things like, I don't know, pansies or cosmos or something like that. But it's really fiddly. The flowers don't last that long once you take them out of the silica. They tend to kind of absorb the moisture again and then they'll go a bit floppy. And it's just it's quite unnatural. And I wanted to include it in my book because it is a method and people do use it, but I don't really use it at all. I'm just all for, well, as you can see, just hanging everything upside down. I'm hoping for the best. And it makes a nice display as well. So
do you use just brown string, or do you tie them with elastic bands? What's the best way to do that?
Yeah, so I use brown string. And I tend to, when I tie them, so I wrap them a couple of times round the stalks, and you kind of want to have bunches of like no more than 10, because you need to make sure that, you know, air can circulate. Strip most of the leaves off apart from the ones that might look quite nice, that are more kind of closer up to the flower heads. And then I just loop them round and tie them in a very simple kind of simple knot at the top, whatever I'm hanging them on, so that I can just literally pull them off and take them away, kind of thing. So yeah, I do it like that, and sometimes you might need to go around and kind of tighten the string if the stalks have shrunk so much that they start falling out, but it's the easiest way.
And forgive my ignorance, but where in the normal person's house who doesn't have a flower shed, where would be the best place to dry their flowers? Where is a dry place? Because you said that and I thought about my house and I realised I don't know the driest room.
So mine, where I used to dry them was in my studio, which would probably have been it used to be a conservatory and then we had it made into like more of a kind of permanent structure. So it would have been the equivalent of like a garden room, if you like. But so I also dried them in the cupboard under the stairs.
Oh, yeah.
I dried them in our utility room, which had, you know, it's quite high ceilings and I used to hang them there. I did dry them in the loft, but you have to be, there was only a very short period of time with which I could use the loft to dry them. And that was kind of September, because in the winter it was too damp and too cold. Mm. And in the summer it was so searingly hot, you would not, you know, it would turn everything to kind of brittle. So another option is an airing cupboard. But again, in the winter, if you've got the heating on all the time, that's probably going to be too hot.
Mm.
Because basically what happens is if any damp gets in, they'll go moldy. And as soon as they go moldy, that's it, you know, and that mold will spread. So if you've got one moldy flower and a bunch of, you know, 10, then eventually they'll all go moldy. If it's too hot and too dry, they'll just become incredibly brittle and you won't be able to work with them. So it's a fine balance to get, basically. So you kind of need, I would say, ambient room temperature with no damp at all, and not direct sunlight. So it's not, in the olden days, it would have been like your airing cupboard, or I don't know, your larder, probably. Like, people had those back in the day, right? Like that kind of thing. Unfortunately, sheds don't work. Greenhouses don't work as a rule. Garages are a bit, I've got some hanging in my garage here and they're not looking great because it's just so damp at this time of year.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a good point on there being too much heat, because that was going to be one of my questions about how do you stop them from going brittle.
Yeah, it's too much heat.
Too basically. Much
it's
heat, too okay.
Much heat. Yeah, it's too much heat and it's direct sunlight. So I learned this a really hard way when I, the first year I started working with them, and I spent, you know, back then it seemed like a shed load of money because I'd never really invested in dried flowers before. And, you know, I had to spend a certain amount with this one supplier who was wholesale. And then I hung them on our conservatory wall and they look beautiful. And then I realized that over the course of a month, they obviously in a conservatory, like the worst idea ever, because it gets so hot. Mm. And when I tried to take them down to make wreaths from them, they literally just crumbled in my hands. You know? Mm. Yeah. So I learned that the really hard way. So yeah, there's two things. It's the extremes that they basically can't handle.
They want a Goldilocks setting.
I think I made that mistake, I think. I hung a bunch of stuff up in my utility room to dry. I did like cress and, what do you call them? Like ping pong, scabious, and a few of those things and some status. And I went to arrange them the other day and they were so brittle. That was going to be my question. I tried to arrange them and everything was just flaking off. It was really sad. They sort of survived-ish.
Yeah, I think... So what I would say, if you have somewhere that you can dry them, and maybe it's slightly warmer than you know your average kind of room temperature, then use that space to dry them. But then store them in a cardboard box somewhere where you can layer them with tissue paper, and that they're not that, you know, they can kind of stay out of that extreme exposure. The problem is if you leave them hanging in the same place, they will, you know, they will become brittle. Those scabious ping pong heads are very hard to dry without them falling apart.
Yeah, they
even
do.
In the best
situations. I've got little scabious seeds all over my house. They just seem to fall off and they travel.
Yeah. So I have not managed it, like, to get them so that they look perfect, actually. I've bought them so they're fine, but I've also bought them and then all of the seeds have fallen out anyway. So I think they're quite kind of quite hard work, basically. So I wouldn't be disheartened.
They kind of look dry to start with, don't they? So I always think with those ones, if you're going to use them, just use them as soon as you've got them.
But, yeah, don't be disheartened. It's a real... I don't know. This is probably the question I get the most on Instagram or in my emails. It is like, why do my flower heads keep breaking off? You know, and I'm like, because they're dried. You know, it's just something that you kind of have to get used to working with. And I always repurpose any flower heads that fall off. So my Christmas tree this year is just going to be a tree taken from the woods legally, or one of those pull your pine things, decorated with a load of Helichrysum flower heads on wire.
That sounds amazing. Please tell me you're going to paint a picture of that.
Yeah, when I've got the time to do it, I will do. And like, I'm going to use amaranth. I've got so much amaranth.
It's instead
like
of tinsel?
So... Yeah.
Oh my God, I'm so excited to see it.
That's a dream.
That is such a good idea, though, to repurpose the heads.
Yeah, exactly. And then nothing goes to waste, and you don't feel so bad about the fact that they've fallen off. But yeah, it's the reality.
So we shouldn't be disappointed if we lose some of them.
No, I think, and you just have to take it. Yeah, it's just one of those things. I think, yeah. You have to work with it, basically.
Well, it must be practice. I think that was my thing. After a summer of real flowers, which are quite, you know, you can really mess with real flowers and they tend to forgive you. I got my hands on these dried ones and I went to arrange them in the same way and they did not like it. We did not get on. I think it's just...
No.
I think it's just practice.
It's different. It's really, really different. Yeah, it is. It is. It's practice and it's patience and it's... I once did a workshop for a florist to kind of teach them how I make wreaths with dried flowers, and they normally only ever work with fresh. And it was just, I think florists particularly work with speed, don't they? So they're like, if someone comes in for a hand dye, you're like, okay, I've got 5 minutes to put this together. You could never do that with a dried flower bouquet. Like, you couldn't make one in 5 minutes because there's no way you could keep things intact. So it's a really... you just have to kind of change the way you work with them. And because I don't normally work with fresh, I don't have that comparison, but people who do will always say to me, it's completely different.
I feel like I'd end up with a handful of dust if I attempted to speed make anything dried.
Yeah, no, you can't do it.
Well, I think my main problem was I had to have a real vision of the end product, whereas with real flowers, you can kind of jam things in after you're done to fill holes. Mm. Whereas I think I found with dried, I had to really be mindful that it was kind of the finished article as it was. Because I used dried curly cress. I don't know if you've seen it. It has like...
Yeah.
And it has these tiny little seed pods that were just flaking off all over the place. So I couldn't like jam another flower in if there was a hole. I had to really try and... Think about it.
Yeah. I know what you mean. You almost, it's a bit like building a jigsaw puzzle, doing a dried flower bouquet or something. Mm. Like it's, you have to think about what it's going to look like at the end before you've kind of started, and almost build your main structure. That's how I make my bouquets, is I kind of build almost my structure of the main, things that are going to hold it in place, if you know what I mean, and then I'll add my whimsical flowers around it. And what I tend to do, rather than working with like individual stems when I'm building a dried flower bouquet, is I will take like a clump of, if I'm working with redanth or something, I'll take a couple of stems and then carefully slot them in. It's you have to be careful.
So what we love doing is asking our guests for some wisdom. So it can be anything. Ooh. It can be what you've learned in this, you know, this unusual year, or something about gardening. Mm. It can be anything. But if you could tell people one thing, what would you tell them? No pressure.
I think it's really important to find your tribe and find the people that get you and stick with them. I think for a very long period of my life, I tried to fit in. You know, as I was saying, like I was gardening, but none of my friends were. By the way, those people are still my friends, but I hadn't found the people that I could kind of do the thing that I loved with, if you know what I mean. And now, it's just been so great to kind of connect with people that share the same values, like the same things as me, make me feel comfortable just being me. And I think that's really important. I'm 40 and it's taken me that long to learn that lesson.
And those are very wise words, I think.
Yeah. and try to do it before you're 40.
It's never too late, though.
It's never too late. Yeah, no, it's so true.
Well, if you haven't found them, Instagram's a good place to start. I know the gardening community on Instagram is lovely. I know that's sort of what you were saying. But they're so kind and sweet. There's so little like hatred. Everyone just seems really sweet in the gardening.
Yeah, lovely people.
No, I think so. And I think in response to obviously the Black Lives Matter and everything that happened this year, like they are, there's a real kind of open and willingness to learn and do better. Mm-hmm. I've found anyway, I've been really impressed with a lot of the kind of movement that's been going on there to make things more inclusive.
I think we'll round up, but I just wanted to mention your book. I know I briefly mentioned it before, but I know it's available in all good retailers. I bought one from Amazon. And I just absolutely loved it. It's called Everlasting Blooms.
Yeah, Everlasting.
Yeah.
It's on my Christmas list.
So there's my book, which I think is a really great Christmas present. And it basically, it's part nature, part craft kind of thing. It's goes into growing. There's a huge section on how to dry, all the different kind of methods, with a list of like my favorite plants to dry as well, and then lots of different projects. And then on my website, I sell all kind of on, you know, through the post. So wreaths, mini wreaths, and bouquets as well. I don't know when this is going to go out, but I'm not going to be open for much longer before Christmas, just because, everything's crazy. But anyway, any time of the year you can go there, but I can't guarantee delivery before Christmas for much longer.
Oh, well, that's great.
So everything I make is made to order, which is why it's a slow process. So yeah.
Well, if there are any, beautiful and definitely worth it.
Yeah.
And if there are any dried flower lovers, your Instagram is a haven. I know Nicole and I have spent many an hour oohing and ahhing over it. So they can find you. Isn't it botanical_tales?
Tales, is, and I do love my escapism on Instagram. I share lots of behind the scenes and stories, and then it's definitely more curated on my grid, but I tend to give tips about what I'm drawing and using and all that kind of stuff. So yeah,
I'm looking forward to finding out more about the chickens.
Yeah, oh god, I love my chickens.
One of the things I love about this podcast, Sarah, is we find our people,
our tribe. Yep, that's for sure,
our tribe. And I think Bex is definitely in that tribe, and she had some wise words there about finding your people, your flower friends, and you know, going with that. And I hope that's what we tried to create on this podcast.
I know Nicole and I had a proud parent moment the other day, because if you're not in our Facebook group, you should come and join us, because all of our people started talking without us. And Nicole and I sent a message being like, oh my god, our people have become
friends.
It
was so exciting. The community we so wanted to create, the community that we really felt was missing, is just like, how cheesy is this? It's blossoming right in front of our eyes, Sarah.
Oh, that was awful.
I'm all about the puns today.
That was terrible. But no, the Facebook group is amazing. And we will be putting a list of Bex's favourite plants. So if you heard anything she mentioned today and you didn't quite catch it, the list will be in the group. If you want to find the group, just search for Let's Grow Girls on Facebook, and our page will come up and the group will come up. And if you request to join, of course, we will have you join our tribe.
So if you're into dried flowers, then we definitely recommend heading on over to Bex's Instagram page, and you'll find lots of gorgeous pictures and more information about the type of flowers she's using to make her gorgeous creations.
You have to make sure to ooh and ah suitably.
And we'll definitely be covering some of those plants in our grow along that we're hoping to do next year.
Ooh, dot, dot, dot. You dropped that one. That one's a secret, Nicole. What are you doing?
I did. So that was a little secret nugget about what we've got planned for early spring, late winter next year. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. Spring. Let's grow along, girls, you could say.
You're absolutely love that. Your quick thinking on the spot, that was brilliant. I love it.
Thank you for joining us. We loved having you. I feel like I'm like saying thank you for coming to my house. Thank you for coming to our house. We've loved having you. If you enjoyed
into our world, thank you for coming into our world.
Yes, into our
flowery world.
Into our world. If you enjoyed this, you can subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts, and you could also maybe leave us a review. That would be nice. But yeah, thank you for joining us. So we will see you next week. Do you have any other snippets up your sleeve, Nicole, about next week?
Oh, I don't know if I want to say, but we already recorded this interview.
We did.
And talking about, like, finding your tribe, this lovely lady.
She's queen of the tribe.
She is.
She's the leader.
She is. I don't know if I'm allowed to have, like, favourite episodes. And I think I say it about every episode,
like favorite
but I
children.
Really love that one. Like favorite children, I really love that episode. I love all of our episodes, but I think next week will be one that a lot of people can get on board with.
And to give you a sneaky snippet, she is American. She will be our first American,
guest from over the pond.
So join us next week for an exciting accent, that's for sure.
And something a little bit different with a little bit of information about maybe one of Sarah's favourite flowers.
Gosh, if anyone doesn't know what you're talking about by now.
I'm dropping all the
that was not a hint.
Secret bombs here.
It's about ranunculus. That's the hint. Sarah loves ranunculus. It's about ranunculus. We will see you next week.
And other things.
And other things, yes. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Are you ready for this jelly? Tell me, are you ready for this jelly?
Now you're going in the outro.